Davis. Join me for Jazz America right after the latest news on VOA 1.
I'm Steve Norman reporting President Obama stepping up pressure on the U.S. Senate, which appears set for a political showdown on Sunday when it meets only hours before some key surveillance powers of the National Security Agency are set to expire.
I don't want us to be in a situation in which, for a certain period of time, those authorities go away and suddenly we're dark, and heaven forbid, we've got a problem where we could have prevented a terrorist attack or apprehended someone who was engaged in dangerous activity, but we didn't do so simply because of inaction in the Senate.
Both houses of the U.S. Congress left for a one-week recess. The House of Representatives overwhelmingly passed the USA Freedom Act. That compromised legislation would end bulk collection of Americans' phone records, but let the NSA search the records held by phone companies on a case-by-case basis. Spanish government has approved an accord to permanently host a U.S. military force that would mainly deal with crises in Africa. The agreement will allow the U.S. to station up to 3,000 military personnel and 40 aircraft at the Morón Air Base located near the city of Seville in southern Spain. The United States on Friday dropped Cuba from a list designating the country as a state sponsor of terrorism. It was another step toward the resumption of diplomatic links between Havana and Washington after a five-decade standoff. Cuba's removal from the list could give it more access to global financial markets and loans from organizations such as the World Bank. U.S. and Cuban diplomats have been holding discussions to improve ties. This is VOA News. Suicide bomber reportedly disguised as a woman blew himself up outside a Shiite mosque in Saudi Arabia's predominantly Shiite eastern province on Friday. It left several dead. Edward Uranian is following the story.
Amateur video showed worshippers shouting and screaming after the sound of the blast outside the Anoud Mosque in the eastern province city of Dammam. Other video showed fire engulfing at least half a dozen vehicles in a car park outside the building as a thick cloud of black smoke filled the air. Arab media reported that the suicide bomber was disguised as a woman dressed in a black abaya and face veil. It was not immediately clear if the bomber was wearing a belt packed with explosives or if his vehicle was booby-trapped. Saudi Arabia's top religious official, Grand Mufti Sheikh Abdulaziz Al-Sheikh, insisted that the blast was a crime and that those who were behind it would be punished. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
Iraqi security officials say two car bombs exploded at two heavily fortified five-star hotels in Baghdad, killing at least 15 people, wounding 42 more. Nobody claimed responsibility for the blast, but Iraq is seeing almost daily attacks that have been frequently claimed by the Islamic State insurgents. A Prophet Muhammad cartoon drawing contest sponsored by a group of potentially armed bikers got underway Friday outside an Islamic community center in the U.S. state of Arizona. Organizers say the rally is in response to an incident earlier this month in which two gunmen opened fire on a similar contest in Texas. Both gunmen were killed. Shooting in Texas was claimed by the Islamic State militants. Amid tough times and high hopes for Nigeria, change there, the country's new president, Muhammadu Buhari, took the oath of office on Friday. Chris Stein reports.
Amid celebrations in the northern city of Kaduna, many voters say they have no regrets about voting for Mr. Buhari, a former military ruler turned Democrat who defeated former President Goodluck Jonathan in presidential polls in March. Mr. Jonathan was the first incumbent president to fail to win re-election since Nigeria returned to democracy in 1999. The leader of the local Igbo ethnic group, Chief Dominic Uzo, says he's keeping an open mind about the new leader.
Let us see whether our story will be different from what we have been having for the past 16 years. It is not out of place in a country to have a change.
Chris Stein for VOA News, Dakar.
FIFA President Sepp Blatter re-elected to another four-year term on Friday, days after football's governing body was shaken by widespread corruption allegations.
That's the latest world news from VOA. This is Russ Davis, your host for Jazz America, welcoming you to the program, a very special edition, as we celebrate the 89th birthday of maybe the most popular and important jazz musician of all time, Miles Dewey Davis, that everyone simply knew as Miles. Yes, on this edition of Jazz America, we'll celebrate what would have been the 89th birthday of Miles Dewey Davis Jr., who was born on the 26th of May in 1926 in Alton, Illinois. He was the son of a dental surgeon and a music teacher, and his family moved when he was very young to East St. Louis, and there is where his musical education and his upbringing occurred. In 1944, just after he graduated from high school, he had a chance to hear and then sit in with Billy Eckstine's big band. It was his first big break, I suppose you'd say. And guess who was in that band? Charlie Parker and Dizzy Gillespie. Well, of course, Miles, along with those two luminaries, became some of the kings of bebop. And I thought it would be very nice to begin this edition of VOA's Jazz America with a taste of some of the earliest work that Miles Davis ever recorded. From 1950, when he was only in his mid-20s. Here's the Miles Davis Nonet featuring, among others, J.J. Johnson, Lee Konitz, Jerry Mulligan and Max Roach with the song Moon Dreams, celebrating Miles on this edition of VOA's Jazz America.
Unbelievably strong, yet so ill at ease. We ascend as we please, and we'll be standing at those gates. Seven Steps Creed.
gotta go. I gotta go.
The great vocalist Cassandra Wilson paying homage to Miles Davis with her album Traveling Miles and her version of one of his classic songs, Seven Steps to Heaven. You're going to be hearing a lot of classic Miles Davis songs on this edition of VOA's Jazz America as we celebrate what would have been his 89th birthday on the 26th of May. This is Russ Davis, and now let's enjoy some of the thoughts of Miles Davis in an interview that was recorded just a few years before his passing. He died in 1991, and in the late 1980s, he had this conversation with the esteemed musician and broadcaster too, Ben Sidran. Here's some of that conversation that occurred at Miles Davis' home in Santa Monica, California, on the California coast. And we'll follow that with another Miles Davis classic here on VOA's Jazz America.
You talk about the sound of the composition as if a song or composition has a central sound to it, a sound source.
I try to get his sound, whoever's writing the composition. If I'm going to play something against that, I have to get the sound that he wants in there without destroying it and blowing over it so that not to bury it. You know what I mean? It really takes a long time to do that. If you lean in that way, it's not. But if you aren't, somebody tells you. When I was about 15, a drummer, I was playing a number in the Castle Ballroom in St. Louis. We had a 10-piece band, 3 trumpets, 4 saxophones, you know. And he asked me, he said, "Little Davis, why don't you play that what you played last night?" I said, "What? What do you mean? What?" He said, "You don't know what it is?" I said, "No, what is it?" He said, "You were playing something coming out of the middle of the tune, and play it again." I said, "I don't know what I play." He said, "If you don't know what you're playing, then you ain't doing nothing." Well, that hit me, you know. I'm like, bam. So I went and got everything, every book that I could get to learn about theory. To this day, I know what he's talking about. You know, I know what note he was talking about.
Yes, Miles Davis recorded lots of other people's songs, including those by his band members. And here's a great example, the title cut from the album ESP, written by saxophonist Wayne Shorter. And it was one of Miles' greatest bands, with Ron Carter on bass, Tony Williams on drums, Herbie Hancock on piano, Mr. Shorter on the tenor saxophone, and Miles on trumpet, recorded in 1965. Miles, ESP, on Jazz America from VOA 1. Miles Davis classic ESP to the music of Ben Sidran. Since he joined in to conduct that quick interview with Miles, we thought we'd give you some of his latest recorded effort. Brand new from the album Blue Camus, the song is Rocky's Romance. We'll be right back.
Ben Sidran with Rocky's Romance from his new release, Blue Camus. We'll hear more from Ben Sidran and his conversation with Miles Davis from the late 1980s, and more of Miles Davis's classic music coming up. But first, I want to invite you to get in touch with me by email. It's very simple. I'll give you the email address to which you can write with your questions, comments, or requests for music. Here's the address, jazzamerica@voanews.com. That's jazzamerica, the two words written as one word, @ voanews.com. jazzamerica@voanews.com. And here's a message I received just a few weeks ago, back in February of 2015, and it comes from Glenn Boahini, who's also known as Kofi, from Ghana. And he wrote me a very brief note, and it was simply this: please play something from B.B. King. Well, a very timely message, of course, because we have to give you the sad news that the great blues man B.B. King passed away on the 14th of May from complications from his long-running diabetes condition. He's had it for over 30 years, and he finally was hospitalized because of dehydration and passed away on the 14th of May. But what a great musical legacy. The man who played that guitar, he called Lucille, and had that wonderful singing voice. I remember not very long ago walking on the streets of New York City past Radio City Music Hall, and B.B. King walked out of the front of the building, and everyone just parted and let him walk through like he was a very magical spirit and a very important person, which, of course, he certainly was. Well, here is some B.B. King in a jazz setting from a recent release from guitarist Lee Ritenour, the album Six String Theory, with B.B. King joining him along with other blues men for the song Why I Sing the Blues. Remembering B.B. King, dead at the age of 89, here on VOA's Jazz America.
Everybody wants to know why I sing the blues. Everybody wants to know why I sing the blues. Well, I've been around a long time. I've really paid my dues. I've laid in a ghetto flat, cold and numb. I heard the rats tell the bedbugs to give the roaches some. Everybody wants to know why I sing the blues. You know I've been around a long time, and I've really paid my dues.
school. Cause ain't got no more room, no more room for him in school. Everybody wanna know why I sing the blues. I say I've been around a long, long time, man, I really paid some dues. Now Father Time's catching up with me. Gone is my youth. Look in the mirror every day and let it tell me the truth. Man, everybody wanna know why I sing the blues. I've been around a long, long time. I really paid my dues. For you all, and everybody wants to know why I sing the blues. Well, I've been around a long time and I really paid my dues. You know the company told me, guess you were born to lose. Everybody around me seems like everybody's got the blues, and I've had my long time. I paid my due. You know I ain't ashamed of it. I just love to sing the blues.
Mm-hmm. Nothing? So what?
Marcus Miller, who was a very important figure in the latter stages in the 1980s in the music of Miles Davis in the last decade of his life. He was a producer of much of Miles Davis's work, wrote many of his most famous songs, worked with him on albums like Tutu and Amandla, won awards with Miles Davis, and was a close associate, as I said, and recorded his song, So What, on his live recording, A Night in Monte Carlo. Marcus Miller, a very interesting aspect to his life is the fact that his uncle is Wynton Kelly, who just happened to be a pianist that worked with Miles Davis on maybe his most famous and influential album ever, Kind of Blue. Miles Davis reflected on that album, Kind of Blue, and following his thoughts, we'll hear some of that music here on VOA's Jazz America.
The recording, Kind of Blue. Does the success of that record surprise you, Miles? It seems like such a simple record to have made in a way.
Not back then, because Bill Evans is one of my all-time favorite pianists. His approach to the piano just brought that piece out, because he used to bring me pieces by Ravel, the concerto for left-handed orchestra. You heard that? It's a piece. Ravel's friend went to the army and came back. He was a pianist, but he lost his right hand, so he wrote a piece for left hand and orchestra for piano. And Bill used to tell me about different modes, which I already knew. And we just agreed on something, and that's the way the album went. We were just leaning toward like Ravel and playing a sound with only the white keys, you know, Dorian minor modes, and it just came out. It was just a thing to do.
Well, it was a beautiful and groundbreaking thing to do, and here's a taste of it now. Miles Davis from Kind of Blue with Freddie Freeloader on Jazz America from VOA 1. Thank you. Style of jazz that became known as modal jazz. Once again, the innovator, Miles Davis, with some of the finest players in all of jazz, from Kinda Blue with Freddie Freeloader. And here's one of Miles' contemporaries, the great flutist, Herbie Mann, who was also not afraid to take some chances and delve into various styles of music, everything from rock to Brazilian to straight-ahead jazz to soul. In this case, soul music. Hold On, I'm Coming, from the album Glory of Love, Herbie Mann. Late 1960s, Herbie Mann, Hold On, I'm Coming, from the album Glory of Love. More of our 89th birthday celebration of Miles Davis next hour on Jazz America.